Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Hello again, and welcome to our final segment here on Saturday. Dr. Marcia Reynolds in Phoenix. How are you today, Dr. Marcia?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You bet. It's a second opportunity to have Marcia with us. Her first book, we joined and talked about Wonder Woman. That was really tied to her doctoral research. And today we're going to go into her second space. The book is called Outsmart Your Brain, How to Make Success Feel Easy. Let me do a brief intro. Marcia indeed is fascinated by the brain, especially what triggers passion and innovation. Early in her career, she worked for a company that went from worldwide success to bankruptcy, and in retrospect, feeling that the downfall was due to how the leaders stifled the voices and thus the motivation of their employees. She moved to a new organization to help shift the culture, rescuing it then from near bankruptcy to become the number one U.S. stock market success in the early 90s. Through her own business now, she has spent years helping organizations worldwide unleash the potential in their people to create amazing success. And in addition to speaking and teaching on leadership, emotional intelligence, organizational change, she's a master certified coach for executives and top talent in multinational companies. Excerpts from Marcia's books indeed have been quoted in the Harvard Management Review, Forbes.com, CNN.com, Psychology Today, The New York Times, and she's appeared on ABC World News Tonight. So a real pleasure, and thanks for giving us some of your time today, Marcia.
My pleasure.
Well, great. Now, what do you mean by that term, outsmart your brain?
Actually, I like to use I'm going to change the words a few, for this quote by Edwin O. Wilson. He said, you can either be the victim of your brain or the master of your destiny with the knowledge of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how your brain works, then basically you can tell it what to do. If you don't, then it will tell you what to do.
So the idea thus of you needing to really get yourself in charge, but you know, many of us always laugh about the noises in our head, right? The board of directors we'd like to excuse. Thank you very much. You're not serving me well anymore. So the journey you've taken to really understand how the brain works and it's tied to behavior, tied to emotions, that's really where you want to take us, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like you said, to ask the board of directors to leave. First off, just having the awareness that that you can ask them to leave, that's really good. A lot of people don't realize they have that power. But it's more than just asking yourself to them to leave or to tell yourself to quit doing things. I mean, that doesn't usually last very long.
Mm-hmm.
That there has to be a corresponding emotional shift before we'll have a behavioral shift. And that's really the key when I say outsmarting your brain, is that you really have to work at the emotional level to make the changes last.
So, you know, how do people differentiate the two? I don't know that folks really are as mindful. I mean, the whole area of emotional intelligence, perhaps we should also lay out a little bit of 101 learning for our listeners that might not be familiar with that term, Marcia.
Sure. Well, you know, that's exactly, Sarah, the problem is that I've heard it called we're neck ups, that we only sit and listen to our brain's noise and we pay no attention to what's going on with our body.
Mm.
And the importance of knowing what's going on in your body is that's usually where the emotions show up. So if I know that when I'm afraid that I tend to breathe very shallowly and my heart beats fast, or when I'm angry I get this knot in my stomach,
okay,
then I can identify the moment that knot appears or my heartbeat starts to go rapidly, and I can stop and say, what's causing this? What is it that I'm is a threat here? And is that real? So we can start asking questions about, you know, what's the reality of the situation when we notice the emotions. Because it's really the emotions that direct the thoughts in our head. And so, again, just trying to change the thoughts, the emotions are going to continue to sabotage our thinking. If we move to the emotional level, we have a better chance of actually shifting how we feel and think in the moment, which will shift then what we do and say.
Well, so some of those common emotional triggers, you mentioned a couple. You can feel your breath, you know, tighten up or your body tense. Mm-hmm. Other ones that are good cues for people to be mindful of.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to Steve, your last guest, and he was talking about sort of patterns of behavior that serve you. And generally our emotional triggers are tied to those kind of strengths that we have.
Okay.
And when we think that somebody is either not acknowledging that strength or trying to take it away, we have a reaction. So for those of us that are pretty strong-willed, we tend to react if we think somebody's trying to take control from us.
Oh, yeah.
If we're really smart, we react when we think somebody must think we're stupid, you know, or trying to make us wrong. If in the moment, if security is important, then, you know, we'll react if we feel somebody's trying to threaten our security. Or being liked is another common trigger. And if that's important and that's helped you to be successful, that people like you, then if somebody doesn't like you, you're going to react. So I think if you take, like, Steve's perspective and look at what are my strengths, you'll also find your greatest triggers. The moment that the brain thinks that somebody's trying to take that away from you or not acknowledge that, then we either react in fear, in frustration, in anger, disappointment. And that then directs our thinking.
Interesting. I know in Marcia's book, by the way, again, for those who may have turned in, it's Outsmart Your Brain, How to Make Success Feel Easy. You actually encourage people to keep an emotional assessment or an emotional log. So
yeah.
We get a way to give voice to what we're responding to throughout the course of a day.
Well, there's actually two reasons to keep the log. One of the reasons of keeping that, and there's actually a copy of the log on my website, outsmartyourbrain.com, if you look under tools, exercises and tools. But it is in the book, and the main purpose is that if we stop like two, three times a day for a couple of weeks and just say, what am I feeling and why? And really start discerning. In the log, there's also a whole list, a page of different emotions. So if you're not sure, you can look and say, yes, I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling embarrassed. You know, you can start differentiating your emotions. But what that does is it starts to create the mental habit of emotional awareness. So after a couple of weeks, you start doing this naturally. So I'm much better at being able to catch myself in the moment, starting to feel something, instead of knowing it a few minutes later after I've already said something damaging.
Right, and stuck your foot in your mouth.
Exactly. Or, you know, stop myself from saying something I should have. So it's both, you know, whether it's the fear or the anger that causes the reaction. I can much more quickly go, uh-oh, there it is. You know, so what's causing that, really? And do I need to say something? Or is it really better for me just to kind of, you know, let this one go?
The other thing you said, I'm just still running around in my head, that we mainly, you know, we're a lot of neck ups, that we spend a lot of time worrying about what is in the head. So if you know you're going into a situation with a potential conflict, right, or that one of those difficult conversations with your boss or with a coworker, I've learned a long time ago that if I just watched my own body language, that right away helped control my breathing and thus then what would come flying out of my mouth. So, meaning if I could just sit in a chair and make sure you have one that has armrests, that you put your arms there with your hands up,
uh-huh.
As a way of being, meaning signaling not just openness and possibility to the other person in the room, but basically telling your brain, okay, slow down the emotional train wrecks. This is about being open, relaxed, and how you could shift it. Is those are the kind of exercises I think you're also well-versed in.
Yeah, and there's a kind of a chicken and egg thing in what you're saying here, that yes, if we manage our posture and even smiling, it's amazing. Just the act of smiling will secrete more of the dopamine, the serotonin in the brain that will counteract some of that adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, if you open yourself and you smile and things like that, it will help you to override some of the negative feelings that may be going on. And I would say that in order to do that and maintain that, you still want to, you know, take that breath.
Yeah.
That's so critical because that really does release the stress. To, you know, kind of clear the brain and implant the emotion you want to feel in the moment, because that emotion is going to allow that to be an authentic posture that you're maintaining instead of kind of opening up and still feeling tense.
So you're saying to plant that emotion. So that emotion you're saying is actually tell yourself the word, you know, I want happy, you know, willful,
you
confident. I'm confident now. And, you know, I'm confident.
Okay, but I want to really differentiate you know, it's not an affirmation. It's not, I am confident now. It's to what does confidence feel like?
Yeah.
You have to shift your whole body into feeling confident, into feeling calm, into feeling proud that you're even in this space, into laughing at yourself in the moment. And laughter is one of the quickest way, you know, to shift your emotions, to, you know, what's going to shift your feelings. So it's more than a thought. It really has to be, you know, a whole body experience. I have to feel this emotion, because otherwise the thought is just going to sit in your short-term memory and it doesn't do a lot of good.
Well, you know, I think you probably, though, for listeners who are really tuning in and following, are rather interesting, bouncing a little bit here, but the idea of controlling my emotions or feeling my emotions, I mean, at least I know the way I was raised, it was all about curtailing them, keeping them in check, not letting them sneak out. You're the oldest child, you shouldn't do this, you know, you're the only woman and all the men, so you can't show da 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 da. And now we're saying, oh no no, to be best served now, I have to allow myself the luxury of feeling it. And thus,
well, feeling and showing are two different things.
Good point, good point.
Okay, and that's, you know, what they were wanting us to say is be careful how you show them, but what they told us was don't feel them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, because you are feeling them, because emotions happen before thought, so all you've been taught is to suppress them. So all this stuff going on in your body and causing damage to your body and your health and will probably show up somewhere else, like when you're driving.
Yeah, right. Or when you're about to put brick right through your computer screen, exactly.
Exactly. Or we say things wrong to the people we love, and which is too bad. It's better at the moment to recognize them, feel them, and then shift them as soon as you can. That's the key, is to, can I shift to a what's called a higher level of motion? You know, so it's not necessarily that I definitely need to express my anger at this moment, but maybe you need to look at the person you love and feel that love and compassion and then say, you know, I am upset about what happened and let me tell you why. But feel the love and compassion before you open your mouth.
So that in fact, you use that word now, high level. So what's the difference between a high level and a low level? What do you mean by that?
Well, the differentiation is, you know, again, all emotions are good to some point, or we wouldn't have them. You know, fear helps us to be careful that we don't take risks that are necessary. Anger can launch great changes in our life. You know, the power of I'll show you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, indeed.
Yeah, I've done that one. But, you know, I always say then quickly shift to passion.
Right.
Don't live with anger. But the thing is that there are those emotions that create negative responses in our body and it's biological responses, and that's anger, fear, disappointment, frustration, and they trigger biological reactions. When we look at what's called higher level emotions of happiness, pride, laughter, you know, contentment, they actually cause neurological reactions, not biological. So it actually makes the brain run more efficiently. And actually we can be more creative and smart if we're operating with these so-called higher level emotions.
Wow, so that's, there you are again, I'm even tying back to our conversation on the very beginning of the show. The more that you can train neurologically, then I imagine it's building your brain capacity, not depleting it in any way.
Yes, that was actually I listened to Bruce your earlier guest too, and so there are different ways, you know, exercise is great for building our brain capacity, but also just doing things that make us feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
And not, you know, focusing on what we're so afraid of and quit watching the news so much.
No, particularly this time of age, this time of, you know, our society and shifting, you're absolutely right. So the question probably would be, and I know, you know, again, you've got books in your book, this idea of the emotional assessment, keeping a journal, using these techniques for 20 plus days, they become a habit. So in truth, your work, Marcia, both on yourself and with others, are you finding people really can rewire your brain to be happier?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, you know, that was one of the things that Bruce had mentioned as well, is, you know, this, that the brain does change and it continues to change. And every time you learn something new, your brain is changing because things are reconnecting and, you know, connecting here and there. And so it's pretty amazing how much the brain can change. So if you actually keep focusing on things that you know, make you feel better, that you can raise your, like, happiness quotient,
mm-hmm.
You'll find that, you know, they always say you create a new outlook on life, but that's what's happening, is that it is shifting. So, you know, there's a lot of argument in the brain world about, you know, is there a set point of happiness? But what I have found is that, again, because the brain can change, and we are rewiring and restructuring it all the time, that, you know, what you focus on is what you create. And I find that to be true.
Yeah, in fact, yeah, exactly what you believe can come to fruition, you know, this idea of positive visioning. But you would say, though, it's more than the, well, just go do it thing, right, the pop psychology approach to it. It really takes some discerning work, you would say, this watching yourself from the outside in.
You do, and again, you know, you get better at it over time, but just like anything, it's a discipline. But I really suggest people start, I have this four-step process. It's, you know, relax your body, because again, all those negative emotions are in your body. Relax your body, then clear your mind, center yourself, and then focus on what you want to feel. Choose one word. And I tell my clients, start your day that way. Kind of set, you know, the intention for the day based on an emotion you want to feel. And then if you're going to go walk into that meeting that you know is going to be tough, quickly relax, detach, center, and focus. Focus on what you want to feel, who you're going to be, and what you want to feel.
So that's where, by the way, folks, the word multitasking is thus not going to serve you well. Correct? If you're really wanting to see the kind of results we all think we can expect from everything we're shouldering.
Yeah. Well, and I believe from my brain work that we don't really multitask. We just shift our focus.
Too many times, yeah.
Real quickly, right, because you only have 100%. And so if you give 50% to one task and 50% to another, you're only giving 50%. You're not giving 100%. You have to be very careful about that. But part of that focus is to come back, to do the reflection. I was talking to this woman a couple weeks ago about coaching with me, and she said to me, I just don't want to do that reflection work.
Well, it's kind of, that's where it starts.
I know. It's like, well, do you want to change? You know? She did not hire me.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's too hard of a journey. Well, Marcia, your work, both on all your reading, your research, and those you collaborate with, but also your coaching endeavor, are you finding any differences between men and women? I mean, fundamentally, whether that be the brain itself or how these emotions and things emote? Emotions emote.
You know,
there they go.
Interesting. I've seen a shift over the last 10 years with men more willing to even use the word emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I started teaching emotional intelligence over 10 years ago, many places asked me to take the word out of the title.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. And now it's like accepted, and it's almost a required leadership competency that you're emotionally intelligent. So at least they're talking about it. Now, is there still stigmas about showing certain emotions at work? It's almost like it's okay to show a little anger, but don't cry. So we still have some issues around what emotions really mean and what we can do with them. I think it's important, even when there's difficult times in the workplace, that you allow the employees to say what they're frustrated or sad or angry about. So, and listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't mean you have to promise things, but you have to allow people to express that. Otherwise, they're going to somewhere else, and it's going to show up in their work. And when I said that the brain is most efficient when we're, you know, thinking or feeling good things, then why would you ever even want a workplace where people are scared and about what's going to happen in the future and, you know, threatened by their bosses? It's just not going to create a productive environment. So, you know, that's for us, our own selves, to know that if we want to produce good work, we have to be feeling good. And it's also when we're creating, you know, working with other people, that shift has to take place.
Or when we're also mentoring. Yeah, even your coaching, I would even say those of us in the parenting role of actually interacting with our youth, regardless of the age.
Yes, you set the emotional tone, especially if you're the socially dominant person, whether it's the parent, the teacher, the coach, the manager. You're setting the emotional tone of that relationship, so you ought to be conscious of what you're feeling and what you would like, you know, the person that you're with to feel in order to make the change.
And you'd also say, by the way, the emotional tone isn't just what's coming from your mouth, but all the other parts of your body from the neck down.
Exactly.
That is what really people, when people see you're clenching your fists and you're saying,
exactly.
So how do you feel happy today? I don't think that's where we want to go.
There's a lot of evidence now that our emotions, you know, my emotions read your emotions. So I don't care how good you think you are at hiding your emotions, I'm going to know if you're mad at me. I mean, children know that. Animals know that. Why would we think that other people wouldn't? And they can now actually measure the electromagnetic energy that we put out by our emotions. And they're doing that down in the University of Tucson, in fact. That's one place in the HeartMath and the HeartMath Institute.
And the HeartMath Institute.
Exactly. Studies, yeah.
Well, so, I think we'd also say, you know, you can run, but you can't hide, right?
Exactly.
That's right. Well, Dr. Marcia Reynolds, thank you so much for joining us. Her book, second book we've talked about here on the air, is Outsmart Your Brain, How to Make Success Feel Easy. You can also see various templates and insights to that piece on her website, outsmartyourbrain.com. Thanks a lot for joining us here today, Marcia, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
You bet. It's a real pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.